Call the answer line where you're the head honcho, the big cheese, top dog, big man, mighty boss. And you can tell us exactly where to go.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online. Just about to push the button on another program from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
By shortwave and satellite, this is the Dutch International Service.
Media Network, Radio Netherlands Weekly Communications Review with Jonathan Marks.
Hello, does that music sound familiar? Well, welcome to a special anniversary edition of the programme. This week I'm presenting the show in shirt sleeves, with a beautiful view of a turquoise blue sea in front of me, and to my right, in the distance, a star-shaped array of shortwave antenna masts. As you may know, 3 minutes before the start of each English broadcast, we read out frequency details, and often make reference to the fact that the broadcast originates from transmitters in the Netherlands, or via one of our two overseas relay stations. One is on the island of Madagascar, the other on the island of Bonaire in the Netherlands Antilles. If you grab a map and look just north of the coast of Venezuela, around 50 miles in fact, you should be able to see three islands. They're usually termed the ABC islands, though strictly speaking, the order is ACB, Aruba, Curaçao in the middle, and the island furthest to the east is called Bonaire. Until 1986, all three islands formed part of the Netherlands Antilles, but Aruba has now been granted a separate status as part of its move towards full independence from Holland. Well, I'm sitting on a hotel veranda just south of the main town on Bonaire. It says Kralendijk on the map, but the locals call it Playa, which simply means beach. And lazing on that beach below me, you can quite easily forget that the rest of the world exists. On the other hand, Bonaire has its own local cable television system brought in by a satellite. It's called Flamingo Television. There's Cable News Network, the US ESPN Sports Channel, Disney Channel, a couple of Venezuelan television stations, and Telecuracao, which comes from the much larger island of Curaçao, just 30 miles west of here. Bonaire doesn't have its own television station, but it does have three radio stations. And when I tell you that the combined output of these stations is 1,250.25 kilowatts, you can see that Bonaire has a fair share of radio. 250 watts are broadcast by the local FM radio station, the Voice of Bonaire.
Para el mejor combinación de música en Nabo Radio, aquí vamos a estar, Voz de Bonaire, 94.7, FM Stereo, super sensacional.
650 kilowatts are used by the evangelical station Trans World Radio, situated on the southern part of the island.
Coming next, a program in English on Trans World Radio, Bonaire.
And the remaining 600 kilowatts are being radiated from Radio Netherlands Bonaire relay station on the northern part of the island. This month marks the 20th anniversary since Radio Netherlands inaugurated its own transmitter site here, and we thought it about time to visit and profile the operation. Incidentally, if you'd like to write a reception report on this programme, giving the date, time, frequency in kilohertz, reception conditions, and receiver and antenna details, we'll send you a special confirmation card that we're putting together to mark this milestone. I hear the hotel band has started up in the background. Wonder if you can hear that on shortwave. Part of the idea to build a relay station here goes back to the 16th of September 1954, when the first stone was laid at the Lopik Shortwave Transmitting Centre, right in the heart of Holland.
Today, I had the privilege to unveil a plaque in a new building where new transmitters will be placed in the use of the Wereldomroep PCJ.
The Antillean government heard what the then chairman of Radio Netherlands had to say and proposed that instead of building one huge station in Holland, they should consider building something in the Caribbean. The idea sat in a drawer for a few years, and then the decade changed.
Window on Holland. Ah, yes. Once again, it's the 31st of December, and it's time to swing open our sound picture window to take a backward glance at the highlights of 1960 here in the Netherlands.
You had me worried there, Van. I thought you intended smashing the window like we did last year.
Well, I must confess it crossed my mind, but, you know, it's kind of expensive, and besides, I'm still paying off last year's window.
Well, I'll tell you what, instead of smashing anything, let's tear a page off the calendar and take a look at January.
All right, here goes.
In 1960, there were internal changes at Radio Netherlands. Dr. Anders Leeuwe, Frans Teamstra, became the director of the Dutch External Broadcasting Service. He began studying the expansion of BBC overseas relay stations and also found the Antillean relay proposal.
I arrived in Hilversum in the beginning of 1960. I had recently travelled in Asia and Africa. The reception of our transmissions at that time was, to put it mildly, poor. Hilversum headquarters, however, were beaming in a kind of euphoria. The new Lopik transmitters were on the air since the end of 59. Moreover, the new studio building was springing up. Everything looked rosy, or so they said.
Because you'd moved, if I'm right, from four villas in the centre of Hilversum to a brand new building outside the city.
Yes. To demoralise rank and file is normally not the director's cup of tea. So I kept my anxiety to myself, and I cut my brains to find a solution. It had to be a relay station on the Antilles, if the Antillians were still interested in such a venture.
They were, but money had to come from the Dutch government. Teamster approached the Minister of Communications, Mr. Courthals, who was also in charge of Antillean affairs in The Hague.
I had three talks with him in 1961. He was a master in diplomatic language and found ingenious ways in order not to commit himself.
Finally, it became clear that the Dutch government hadn't got the money. Shortly afterwards, Jackie de Broe, the Antillean Minister of Culture, told Radio Netherlands they couldn't wait any longer. They'd signed a deal with Transworld Radio for the establishment of a medium and shortwave radio station in the Antilles. Leeuwe Teamstra immediately phoned Transworld Radio to congratulate them on their success and suggest that Radio Netherlands was interested in hiring airtime if it was available. At the end of 1963, the deal was sealed. Raymond Dupré, now working as an editor in Radio Netherlands' newsroom, recalls being sent to Bonaire with another colleague to compile the programme airtime that had been leased to Radio Netherlands.
We were sent too early. I think they made a mistake. Because when we arrived in Bonaire, there was nothing there. Transworld Radio was partly on the air with their own transmissions. But anyway, they weren't ready for us. So we just went to the beach, read a lot of books, I explored the whole island, and had a lot of fun.
Chuck Roswell, now frequency coordinator for Transworld Radio Bonaire, recalls the procedure.
Yes, Radio Nederland leased time on medium wave. Transworld Radio would sign on at in the evening on medium wave, 800 kilohertz, with the Antillean National Anthem and Transworld Radio's programming. And then when it came time for Radio Nederland's programming, Transworld Radio would sign off. There'd be a period of silence, carrier on, but no modulation. And about a minute later, Radio Nederland would sign on with their programming. And when they were finished, there'd be a sign-off, a period of silence, and then Transworld Radio would sign back on and continue broadcasting until sign-off quite early in the morning.
The small team of combined Radio Netherlands and TWR personnel were given the task of compiling daily 50-minute broadcasts. Some shows were pre-recorded 4 weeks in advance and shipped to Bonaire by airmail, but news and current affairs had to be picked up off the air using a sophisticated receiving system. In fact, part of the past is still standing on the island now.
You can see it today. There's a big dual diversity rhombic antenna out behind Radio Nederland's studios. Transworld Radio had an operator, usually one of the ladies, who would monitor the sideband broadcasts from Hilversum and record them, and then they were in turn aired over the transmitters.
This is Amsterdam calling on a transmitter of the Netherlands PTT.
That's a studio recording of the point-to-point identification on the Kootwijk single sideband transmitter in Holland, call sign PCK23, designed to help the monitors in Bonaire tune in the newsfeed. Under poor conditions, though, this is what it sounded like in the Caribbean.
This is Amsterdam calling on a transmitter of the Netherlands, PTT.
The news was transmitted to us. We recorded it and rebroadcast it half an hour later. So we had to tape the news broadcast. We had to judge the quality of the tape, whether it was good enough for relaying or not. If it wasn't good enough, we just had a transmission without news, and that happened now and then.
But it was clear to Radio Netherlands director Teamstra that something had to be done to improve the reliability of the link between Holland and Bonaire.
The really important expansion of transmitting time Holland-Bonaire came when on October the 1st, 69, the Dutch PTT finally agreed that the actual parts of our programs could be sent to Bonaire via their single sideband transmitters. That was about the time we had our own transmitters there. But during the whole period of renting these transmitters from Transworld Radio, we had to do with the first rather primitive way of transmission.
So you just had to pick up Lopik off the air and hope that the quality was good enough to rebroadcast
it? Yes, so that was a very difficult period.
By now, it was becoming obvious to the Radio Netherlands management that they needed at least two relay stations abroad to reach distant target areas with a competitive signal. Bonaire was ideal for the Americas, the Pacific and West Africa, whilst Madagascar came under consideration for southern and eastern Africa plus Asia. But were there any technical reasons why they chose Bonaire out of the then six islands which made up the Netherlands Antilles in the Caribbean?
To be honest, no. Originally, Transworld Radio had found a place on the Isle of Curaçao. They had already started with that preliminary work when the Landsradiodienst and especially the airport made serious objections, saying that their communications would be disturbed by such a heavy transmitter. It wouldn't be a good combination. They were not very far from the airport, though. So they decided to move from Curaçao to Bonaire. And I was only, well, I had a lease contract with them, so I had to follow. So we came on the Isle of Bonaire. But once on the island of Bonaire, I did not find it only a very suitable place for our transmissions, but also very friendly surroundings. And there was no reason why I should look for another place. Couldn't be better than Bonaire.
Hiring airtime from Transworld Radio was successful in building up much larger audiences, but the ultimate goal was a relay station of their own. Then Radio Netherlands learned that others were interested in the island too.
We still were in the phase of final crystallization of our ideas when a foreign station, the Deutsche Welle, came along to see what they eventually could achieve on the island of Bonaire. But now, in view of the competition from outside, it became essential, so we felt, to move this part of the overall project forward. And we had to move fast. The Dutch government realized this. On December 22nd, 1965, a press conference was held in Willemstad, Curaçao, where the Antillean Prime Minister, Mr. Jonker, and the Director of Radio Netherlands, announced that an agreement had been reached under which the Wereldomroep would build a transmitter station of her own.
In March 1969, it was ready to be inaugurated. Two 300-kilowatt transmitters had been purchased from the Philips company and a large antenna array from Switzerland. Bruce Parsons, who was then working with the English section, remembers that day well.
As a matter of fact, they sent me down to Bonaire for the ceremony itself. Mr. Teamstra, who was the director of this company at that time, was there. I did a 15-minute interview with him, only to find out that nothing was coming on the tape at that time. It was some kind of a technical problem. So after this long 15-minute interview, I had to go back to Mr. Teamstra again and go through the whole thing all over again to get the interview, which I finally did get. And this was relayed back to Hilversum and then broadcast later.
So when actually you made an interview in Bonaire, it was sent back to Hilversum and
correct,
then came back over the line again.
Correct, yeah.
In fact, it was in June 1978 that Radio Netherlands became one of the first shortwave broadcasters to use the satellite feed to an overseas relay station. First, via a complicated route, though, through Curaçao, until a couple of years ago when we installed our own Intelsat receiving dish on Bonaire. In the last 20 years, thousands of hours of programs have been broadcast via the station. Maybe these sounds are familiar.
Well, Bruce, another Saturday will soon be here.
Right you are, Graham. Another sizzling, solid, snappy, super-duper, freaky-funky and fabulous What's New show.
Let's keep in touch.
Goodbye. It was mentioned that Harry Van Gelder was responsible in great measure for getting the whole idea of World DX Friendship Year across. So let's go to Harry first.
And I mentioned it for the first time in our DX Jukebox program on the 4th of May, 1972. And we got hundreds of enthusiastic reactions.
This is Tone Herman's In the Penthouse.
And this is Parsons. Tone, while you're singing, what can I do?
Ask the gentleman in the corner what he's drinking.
And now, your DX Jukebox host, Dick Speakman.
Hi, and welcome to the program. And that's the end of the year edition for 1977. And we've made it a special DX Jukebox for the occasion because we're going to link up with London. And on the line now, we should have the BBC's World Radio Club.
From Radio Nederland, in Hilversum, Holland, it's Saturday Sound Studio, the Triple S Show.
This is DX Jukebox, the weekly communications magazine from Radio Netherlands, produced and presented by Jonathan Marks.
So much for the past. At this moment, the Bonaire relay station is being upgraded with a new 250-kilowatt transmitter. Just outside the town of Kralendijk is the satellite receiving centre and administration offices. A cable and radio link pass the received signal to the actual transmitter site some 10 kilometres to the northwest. Remember, before the satellite, programmes had to be picked up off shortwave, and you can't build a shortwave receiving station right next door to a transmitting antenna pumping out 300 kilowatts. It's a 10-minute drive from Kralendijk to the transmitter site. As you drive along the coastal road, you can not only see the antenna masts, the tallest of which is 105 metres high, but you can hear the constant wind blowing through the antenna rigging. On my tour of the facility, I first met up with Vincent Morris, who's in charge of the antennas and the power for the relay station. We wandered out to take a closer look at the directional antennas.
OK, we're standing outside. How many antennas have we got here, first of all?
About 14 antennas we have.
And which directions are they firing in?
They are firing in different directions to Europe, to South America, North America, East and West, and also to New Zealand and Australia. They're curtain antennas, and some of them we can beam in different directions by slewing.
Right, so that's where you're electrically changing the angle very slightly by a few degrees?
Precise.
And are you having to make any changes because of the new transmitter that's being installed now?
Well, I don't think so, but in the course of time, the propagation changes, and it makes us have to make certain changes, certain slewing. Probably in the future, we might even have to put new antennas.
For different bands?
For different bands. It depends on the sun activity and all of that sort of thing.
Yeah, right. The other important thing about this station, compared with our other transmitting stations from Radio Netherlands, is that here you have to generate your own power.
Yes, we have to generate our own power. 20 years ago, when we first started to operate on Bonaire, we didn't have enough power from the electrical company, and then we built our own power station, and we remained with that up to today.
So how many generators have you got?
We've got 5 generators, 3 working constant, generating a necessary power about 1,000 kilowatts, 1 million watts, and we have 2 engines in spare.
1 megawatt, that's a bit difficult for some people to understand. Roughly how much is that if you put it into domestic terms?
In domestic terms, I would prefer to put it over in electric energy, about 20,000 kilowatt hours per day, which would equal about 40 full equipped houses for 1 month.
Now, the island itself is a superb place from a recreational point of view. Of course, you've got to do some work. And I guess the biggest problem must be the salt air.
In a certain sense, we have great trouble with the salt air. For instance, our towers, yes, on the top side of the towers, they are really contaminated by the salt air. And we have to give them a maintenance in such a way that we can let them stand for a few years, 3 or 4 years.
So how many people are working on the antennas?
On the antennas, we have a crew of 4 people, and the maintenance department, they deliver us help when we are doing major work.
And you've also got to look after the diesel generators. Is that a lot of work?
Well, I am assisted by 8 other people. The generators itself, we work every 5 years, we work on the generators, and the engines, we work on the engines every 9 months. Each engine run 9 months, and then we take it apart to look at it. And that is a schedule.
The generator house has no doors on one side of the building. The heat has to be allowed to escape. But even with the doors open, it's hot in there.
It's quite warm, I guess 40 to 50 degrees. The most of the heat that is generated in the engine room, that comes from the generators because they use more air for cooling than the diesel engines. The diesel engines are cooled mostly by water.
And what about fuel to run the station? Because you said that they're diesel generators, obviously using oil.
The diesel engines, in order to generate the amount of power we have, we use about 6,000 liters of gas oil per day.
And the two storage tanks in front of us, how much can they hold?
They both can hold a total of 124,000 liters of gas oil.
So how long will that last you?
That will last us about 22 days. We get deliverage every other day.
Vincent then left me to get back to his crew. The transmitters were due on the air again with an Arabic transmission for North Africa. Alexander Coffey, who's in charge of maintaining the two Philips transmitters, explained how they turn the power from the generators into transmitting power. Now, we've been talking to Vincent about the diesel generators. They're producing, obviously, the power. What happens then? How many volts do you get to the transmitter hall?
They deliver about 11 kilovolts. In our high-tension room, we change that to 9 kilovolts. Where it's rectified, we get the 11 kilovolts again. And that's fair to the transmitters.
And how much energy do they use? Because they're 300 kilowatt transmitters, but that doesn't mean to say that they turn 300 kilowatts straight into power that goes up to the antenna. So how efficient are they?
No, that would mean they would be 100% efficient, but we use about 500, 600 kilowatts, and that we turn into 300 kilowatts.
And the rest is turned into what?
The rest is turned into heat, of course, and that's why we need to cool the transmitter quite a bit. But we do that with water and air.
And where do you get the water from? Is it?
We get salt water, salty water from the sea. It's fed to the heat exchanger, where it cools distilled water. That is pumped into our transmitters, and that goes back to the heat exchanger, and it, so the transmitters are cooled.
Now, the transmitters are 20 years old. Are they beginning to show their age?
Yes, you could say that. You couldn't see that with the number of breakdowns, but with the hours we put in for maintenance.
Indeed, because you've got to run two transmitters for most of the 24 hours, in the sense you've only got basically the morning to do any maintenance work.
Yes, and sometimes it's the time is too short.
We went inside out of the midday sun. Not only is it dangerous if you're not used to the high ultraviolet light, the light in fact was so strong I couldn't read the level meter on my tape recorder. In a newly converted part of the transmitter building, Chief Engineer Eric van Sley showed me a third transmitter that's nearly ready to go into operation.
So does this mean we'll be using three transmitters on Bonaire in the future?
No, Jonathan. The main thing will be in future also two transmitters in the air. But of course, the third one will be standing by as a reserve transmitter. We will make our programs with our new transmitter and one of the old Philips transmitters, the new one being of Brambo Ferry. The reserve transmitter will, of course, be one of the old Philips transmitters. Only in case of a collapse of one of the transmitters, the reserve transmitter will, of course, make a program.
Now, the new transmitter is of completely different design. I guess it must be more efficient than the old ones.
Yes, of course, they are quite more efficient. One of the problems with the old transmitters is that they have quite a lot of tubes. In the new transmitter, we only use two tubes, one very small one in the driver stage, and for the final stage, we use a big tube, those two being the only tubes available on the whole transmitter. For the rest, it's all solid state.
If you've ever experienced an electric shock from a mains appliance, you can imagine how careful you've got to be when potentials of up to 28,000 volts are used in modern transmitters. The components are expensive too. An output power valve for the old Philips transmitter costs in the region of $12,000. Most of the routine work is preventative maintenance, making sure programs aren't lost because the transmitter isn't functional. When you're working with radio frequency energy of such high powers, transmitters can also be temperamental.
Might a flashover occur in the new transmitter, then would there be any windows in the transmitter, then you could see it, but at the moment we don't have windows in the transmitter, so you can only hear it.
And you can certainly hear what amounts to a miniature thunderstorm inside the copper-lined transmitter cabinet. Currently, programs from Bonaire are going out on the old Philips transmitters, but are they doing any on-air tests of the new 250-kilowatt Brown-Bavari transmitter?
No, at the moment we are running through a program lasting 2 to 3 weeks. This is done at an artificial antenna, also called the dummy load. And after that we will, of course, when all the problems have been solved, go through the air.
I know Bonaire is outside the hurricane belt, but do you get any the thunderstorms?
We sometimes get the thunderstorms, but as far as I know up till now, and I've been here for about 1.5 years, I haven't seen any thunderstorm, not a real thunderstorm.
You say you've been here for a year and a half. Don't you feel lonely?
No, of course I'm here with my wife, and we both enjoy it very, very much, and we have a very nice crew at the station, so I consider them all to be friends.
Indeed, the Antilles is not only warm weather-wise, the people on the island certainly know how to give someone a warm welcome. Well, finally on this tour, I went into a shielded, air-conditioned room to meet the head of continuity, Fred Cecilia. He's one of the team that ensures programs coming in by satellite are on the right frequency on shortwave and are beamed to the right target area.
Right, well, that sounds like a single sideband that you might find on shortwave. Actually, it's not single sideband. It's the way the signal is transferred from Hilversum to the relay station in Bonaire. You've got two signals coming in, and then you combine them here. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. We received the signal in two sections. And the upper band is for the high frequencies, and the lower band for the lower frequencies. And here in the studio, we will combine the two signals to one signal.
So when you combine it, it sounds like this.
Hoe oud worden kabouters?
Zo'n eerste meegemaakt heb, zo'n 175 jaar.
Right, there's the Dutch transmission going on at the moment. And behind us are a rack of four tape recorders with tapes standing by. What are they for?
The signal coming from Hilversum, we will normally put it direct on air. But we also tape the signal. So we can always put something on air if something is going wrong.
But the satellite line is now much better than it used to be because you've got your own ground station.
Yeah, that's true. The fallouts are very few at this moment, but we just keep going on taping the programs because you never know.
Indeed. Well, let's hope that the gremlins don't choose this transmission to strike now. In the short time that I've been here, I've gained great respect for the 44 people who make up this team. That's the end of our tour for the moment, but Bonaire's an excellent place for shortwave listening. I'll be letting you hear some montages from the dial in a programme coming up shortly here on Media Network. Of course, our Bonaire relay station has been very useful during the recent ionospheric disturbances, punching into the Pacific and North America when other signals direct from Europe just faded away. Bye for now.
I've been doing some listening between 3 and 30 megawatts. It's, some people get static, some people get far off countries. I just get a headache.
Serving the universe from Flevo, Radio Netherlands, with relays in Russia, Bonaire, and Madagascar. Any questions?
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network program. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.